Eleanor, come on in.
Hi, Eleanor. I'm Michael.
How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. Oh, one question. Where am I? Who are you and what's going on?
Right. So, you, Eleanor Shellstrop, are dead. Your life on Earth has ended, and you are now in the next phase of your existence in the universe.
Cool. Cool. I have some questions. So who was right? I mean, about all of this?
Well, let's see. Hindus are a little bit right. Muslims a little bit. Jews, Christians, Buddhists. Every religion guessed about 5%, except for Doug Forsett.
Who's Doug Forsett?
Well, Doug was a stoner kid who lived in Calgary during the 1970s. One night he got really high on mushrooms, and his best friend Randy said, "Hey, what do you think happens after we die?" And Doug just launched into this long monologue where he got like 92% correct. I mean, we couldn't believe what we were hearing. That's him, actually, right up there. He's pretty famous around here. I'm very lucky to have that.
So, maybe my biggest question.
Well, it's not the heaven or hell idea that you were raised on. But generally speaking, in the afterlife, there's a good place and there's a bad place. You're in the good place. You're okay, Eleanor. You're in the good place.
Well, that's good.
Sure is. Okay, let's take a walk, shall we?
Oh, did I have a purse? No, I'm dead. Right. Okay.
All right, let's close in prayer. You got that. Thank you, Amy. Thank you. You know, we serve coffee. So if you need to wake up, you can just go get that. I won't be offended at all. So what's heaven like? We're going to take 3 weeks to look at what heaven, next week, we're going to look at what heaven, what we can know about what heaven looks like, what our Bible tells us. In 3 weeks or 2 weeks from now, we've got one to this week, the next week after that. We're going to look at the end of the world as we know it. What do we have to go through before we get to that place? What are 5 things we can know for sure about the end of the world? But today we're going to talk about Paradise Lost, because we were in paradise. That's where the whole thing starts, in paradise. And somehow we as human beings mess that up and we lost that. And what does that have to do with us today? And what we're going to find is that in your greatest darkness is God's opportunity to shine his greatest light, okay? So I'm going to start like this. I don't know if you're a movie person. Anybody a movie person? I go to movies with my wife, and there's a couple things you need to know about going to movies with my wife. One, it's a Tuesday. Why? Because at AMC theaters, movies are $5 on Tuesday. So I'm a cheapskate. Secondly, we have two different views when it comes to movies, all right? I cry at everything. Every opportunity. Sometimes a trailer will happen and I'm crying. My wife cries at nothing. I'm clearly the woman in the relationship. For sure. Cause, you know, like we'll watch Old Yeller and I'm crying and she goes, well, it looks like they need to pick out a new dog. You know, it's like, okay, we can have this happen. We'll walk out of a movie and I'm drying my tears and I look over at my wife and say, what do you think? And she said, that was the stupidest movie I've ever seen. That I did not make up that story. That literally happened. So that's one difference that we have. But here's what I think is the downside of going to movies with my wife is she knows what's going to happen. She just, you know, first 5 minutes, she knows how it's going to end. She knows. It's not just like those stupid Christmas Hallmark movies that she makes us watch. You guys know what I'm talking about? Because I can predict that, right? You know that couple, that those two people, they seem like they don't like each other. You know what? I see a spark. That's easy. But, you know, my wife will, you know, we go into the movie and she's like, nope. Bruce Willis is already dead. Did I blow that movie for you? It's like 30 years old now. No, Darth Vader's Luke's dead. Yep, I got it. We were in, did you guys ever see A Beautiful Mind? There's right in the middle, there's this moment where it all comes clear. A minute before she does this, you know what? This, none of this happening is real. She totally blows the entire movie for me. 1 minute before it happens. Now, the reason why my wife is able to do that is it's a literary, it's called forecasting or foreshadowing, right? And it happens in movies, it happens in books. Foreshadowing is just a literary tool that people use. And I'm going to show you, we're going to talk about this. All of this will be spiritual in just a second. But I want to show you what that looks like. This is just, I just love this scene so much. I want to show it to you. It's from the movie The Incredibles. Okay, here, watch this. Watch this with me.
I need a new suit.
A new suit? But where the heck am I going to get a new
suit?
You
can't. It's impossible. I'm far too busy, so ask me now before I again become sane.
Wait, you want to make me a suit?
You push too hard, darling. But I accept. It will be bold, dramatic,
yeah,
heroic.
Yeah, something classic, like Dinah Guy. Oh, he had a great look. Oh, the cape and the boots.
No capes.
Isn't that my decision?
Do you remember Thunderhead? Tall, storm powers. Nice man, good with kids.
Listen.
November 15th, the 58th. All was well, another day saved, when his cape snagged on a missile.
Thunderhead was not the brightest ball.
Stratogale, April 23rd, 57. Cape caught in a jet turbine.
You can't generalize about this.
Metaman, express elevator. Dinah Guy, snag on takeoff. Splashdown, sucked into a vortex. No capes. Now, go on. Your new suit will be finished before your next assignment.
You know I'm retired from hero work.
As am I, Robert. Yet here we are.
I only need a patch job for sentimental reasons.
That happens. Any guesses what's going to happen at the end of the movie? Anybody? Something bad with the cape, right? This happens. Do we have that clip?
Bob, throw me!
This isn't the end of it! I will get your son eventually! I'll get your son!
Oh, no.
Feels like a grim way for a Disney movie to end. Foreshadowing. If I were to ask you, where am I going to find in the Bible? Tell me where to open up to find information about Jesus. 99 out of 100 people will tell me. New Testament. No question. Go to the New Testament. Do you know that our entire Old Testament has one purpose? It is to point to this one man. It is foreshadowing about this one situation in which this man, Jesus Christ, is going to come down to earth and he's going to enter our darkness and he's going to bring light. That's the story. And we pick it up at the beginning. Colossians says this about Jesus. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him, all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible, invisible, thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He's before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have supremacy. Heaven and earth, beginning and end, all point to this one person. And in this one person is the image of what heaven is going to be like. You know, 72% of all Americans believe in heaven. That's reality. C.S. Lewis put it like this: the fact that our heart yearns for something earth can't supply is proof that heaven must be our home. So I want to look at the very beginning of the story. And I'm going to look at it in two ways, right here at the beginning. I'm going to look at the beginning of the story in the Old Testament and the beginning of the story in the New Testament. I'm going to read two passages, and I want you to see if you can find any similarities, okay? And these all point to heaven, all right? There's a purpose to all of this. First off, we're going to start in Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening, and there was morning the first day. The earth was formless, empty, dark. What does God bring? Light. Okay, we have another glimpse of this in John chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning was the Word. The Word is Jesus, by the way. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. The Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made. Okay, so creation is tied up in Jesus. Without him, nothing was made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome. This is the theme of the book. It was dark, and in comes light. That's what it's all about. In your greatest darkness, God shines his greatest light. Now again, this is the literary trope. This is in every book. In fact, the most overused statement in all books is this: it was a dark and stormy night. But that's what all movies are like, right? There's a dark part and then light comes in. That's what it makes a good movie. The evil empire is rising. We need the Jedi. Andy Dufresne is wrongfully accused. Woody needs to find Andy. It's raining. But Gene Kelly has to keep singing. He is literally singing in the rain. Singing and dancing in the rain. It's dark and there's light. When you look at the first book of the Bible, that's what it looks like. Abraham and Sarah are childless. It's dark. Flood threatens Noah and his family. Jacob steals his brother's birthright. Joseph was sold into slavery. It's dark. Look, this is the theme of our lives, right? It was dark. We were far from God. We were doing our own thing. We had messed up our whole life. And God's light shone into our life. How many people lived that life? How many people? That was you, right? There was darkness, and God shone in your deepest darkness, gave the opportunity for God to shine his light into your life. I still remember that day. I was 14 years old. Wildly nerdy, okay? World-class nerdy. I had literally very few friends. I was one of the shyest people you'd ever met. And it was hard to believe, right? I'm obnoxiously extroverted now. But there I was, and I was at a concert that I didn't like, and the guy was preaching a message that didn't resonate with me. But God called my name. And I was the kid that, like, I'd been going to church and I prayed that prayer so many times, right? I was out in the right field playing baseball and I prayed that, God, come into my heart. And that day when I walked forward, I could just feel God calling my name. And I woke up the next morning and he was still with me. And I knew he was real and I knew he was going to use me. Don't you think it's ironic that God chose somebody who literally had zero friends and couldn't speak in front of anybody to stand up on stages in so many places? It was dark, and God shined his light into my life. I'm guessing there are probably some of you right now who maybe you've never made that decision and you're wanting God's light to shine into your life. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So I want to get back to the beginning. This morning we're looking at paradise and how paradise was lost and what we can learn from that. And really, again, it's the story of how God shines light into our darkness. So if you look at Genesis chapter 2, I love this moment. It says this, "Now the Lord God had formed out of the ground all the wild animals and the birds in the sky." Anybody like animals? Love animals. "He brought them to the man to see that what he would name them. And whatever the man called them, each living creature, that was its name. So the man gave names to all the livestock, the birds in the sky, and all the wild animals." God, how great does this sound? Right? God is literally bringing animals to you. You're just standing there, and each animal comes, and you get to name it. And for the most part, you know, Adam did a pretty good job, I think. Right? There's some notable exceptions. Do you know that there's a fish called the spiny lump sucker? There is also a pleasing fungus beetle. There's a pink fair armadillo. That sounds cute. Here's one that doesn't sound as cute. There's a satanic leaf-tailed gecko. Okay, tell me if you can figure out two characteristics of this creature. The screaming hairy armadillo. What are two characteristics you know about the screaming hairy armadillo? I have a friend who was a comedian. He used to make this joke. Out of all the things in the world that can fly, how did fly get the name fly? We're obviously just having fun. I don't know if Adam named any of those animals these things, but can you imagine being in that moment where you're in paradise and the animals are coming up to you one at a time? Now, we really can't relate to that, right? The only animals that willingly come up to us and approach us are our dogs. And quite honestly, they're idiots. Right? Maybe that sounds mean, but let me explain. So I had a basset hound, and I took him to have him neutered. And when I picked him up, he was so happy to see me after I had that. He had no idea what I had just done to his life. So happy. In paradise, this is what it looked like. Animals would approach. Now they don't. Every animal flees from us. Coyotes flee from us. You get too close to a bird, it flies off. Deer get anywhere near. I love seeing deer. And so I try to get as close as I can. As soon as they notice me, they run off. It's like they've all seen Bambi, right? They all saw the movie. Like they know what happens. Uh-oh, this guy's going to kill me. He's going to set everything on fire. This gives us an idea of what paradise was. It gives us an idea of what paradise will be. Isaiah 11:6 says this, "The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat, the calf, and the lion, and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them." That's pretty cool. We love that. That's why y'all watch Tiger King. Okay, jump to the next set of verses in Genesis. "Now the serpent was more crafty than any of the wild animals the Lord had made. He said to the woman, 'Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden?' The woman said to the serpent, 'We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden. But God did say you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden. You must not touch it or you will die.' 'You will certainly not die,' the serpent said, 'for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened. You will be like God, knowing good and evil.'" Okay, quick point. God did not make the serpent to be evil. This is just the form that Satan took. And this moment brings a lot of questions. I don't know if you've ever considered this. But do you ever wonder, like what if they didn't eat? Right? Does that ever cross your mind? Or have you ever thought, what would have happened if they didn't eat the fruit, right? Or would we not die? Here's a bigger question. Why did God put it in the middle of the garden anyway, right? If it's so bad, why did God not, why did he even put it there? Okay, let me help you understand something. There is no such thing as true love without choice. Let me put you in two scenarios. In which scenario will there be the most love? A wedding ceremony with a couple that met in college and across a crowded biology lab, their eyes locked on, and they went to their first date at McDonald's and they had ice cream together, and they learned that they both liked dancing and video games, and they just fell in love. That scenario? Or here are two people that their parents arranged their marriage, and on the wedding day they meet. Now, which scenario is their love? Now, the couple that had an arrangement, they might learn to love each other, but there's not love in that moment. There's no love without choice. We have to be able to choose. And with our relationship with God, He wants us to be able to choose. You can have to choose God or not God. That's why there was fruit in the garden. And you think, well, why did, you know, what would have happened if we wouldn't have eaten it? Well, I'm not sure that's really the point. These two people are representative of us. Adam means humanity. Eve means life. These two people represent us. My wife used to teach junior high Bible. And she was teaching this principle here about Adam and Eve. And this kid named Jeremy raised his hand. He said, "Miss Hawkins, I got to be honest with you. If Adam and Eve didn't eat the fruit, I would have." And that's the reality. Okay, so let's talk about this a little bit more. We'll get a little deeper into this. What was the sin? Fruit eating? Is that the sin? Was the sin God said, don't do this, and so they did it, so that was the sin? Here's the sin. The devil put it like this: you will be like God, knowing good and evil. So, rather than God being the one who decides what's right and wrong, you're the one who decides what's right and wrong. That's the first sin. That's the biggest sin. That's our biggest sin. And today, this is what it sounds like. You know what? I just did what's best for me. You know, it seemed the right thing to do at the time. I had to make a decision for me. In the middle of the thing that you wish you had never done, the biggest mistake, this is your line of thinking. I just did what was right for me. Do you know that's a religion? And if you follow this line of thinking, that I know the name of your God, at least I know the name of the God in my scenario. Do you know what his name is? His name is Jack. In fact, I have a picture of that God right here. There he is. I went online to find out that you can make sculpture of yourself. And so I made a sculpture of myself. What do you think? It's pretty godlike, right? I'm not the only one who has a God that they serve like that. Guess who this is? Okay, that's Rachel. Hey, Rachel. How you doing? That's the one she chose for herself. Okay, anybody want to guess who this is? That's Serena. That's the goddess Serena. Okay, this one may be a little bit easier. There's Brent. I don't know why God would have that big a mole. Okay, we have one more. That's Jill. Hey, Jill. How you doing? All right. I know she's pretty, huh? Listen, we can take those down. Thank you. There is a God you're following, and most of the time it's you. And you just decide, instead of God knowing what's best, I know what's best. I just do what's right for me. And there are parts of the Bible you love, and there are parts of the Bible you go, you know what? I think I know better. This is outdated. I'm not going to do this. And every time you make those decisions, It leads you to the worst decisions of your life. It leads you to not thriving the way you're supposed to thrive. And that's what original sin was. Now look at one of the consequences of that sin. Genesis 3, verse 10. He answered, I heard you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid. And he said, who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree that I commanded you not to eat? What was their first instinct after they made that mistake? Hide. That's what we do. We want to hide. We're ashamed. We take that very bad thing and we put it way down deep so nobody can see it. And I want you to notice the consequence. Genesis 3:21, the Lord made garments of skin for Adam and his wife, and he clothed them. Where did that skin come from? It came from one of the animals that Adam had just named. This cow, this sheep that had wandered up to Adam. He scratched it behind its ear. He gave it a name. That animal lost its life. If you look to the whole Old Testament, you see that there's animal sacrifice. Why is that? That's so weird, right? Because there needs to be a blood sacrifice for our sin. Why don't we do it anymore? Because Jesus became the ultimate blood sacrifice for you and me. Because in our deepest, darkest moment, when you did that thing that you wish you had never done, when you hurt that person, when you broke that heart, when you got locked in that addiction, God shined his brightest light to save you. Because that's what Jesus does. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. He willingly did that for you. It's the theme of the book. It's the theme of the world. If you let it, it can be the theme of your life, that God will shine his brightest light in your darkness. Now let me show you what that looks like. For some of you, you've experienced this. There was a moment where you just knew he was real and you responded to that. And maybe it was at a prayer, or maybe you were praying with a friend, or maybe you were at a church and you went forward, or maybe it was at a camp, and all of a sudden it became clear. God's real. And I've been doing it my own way. And instead of doing it my own way, I'm going to do it God's way. And bam, he came into your life. And in that moment, whether you knew it or not, all that old stuff was forgiven. And a new life was forged. A new way to live your life. He came in. In your darkness, he shined. Now, I would love to say that's the last time that's ever going to happen to you in your life, but it's not. You're still going to have dark things happen to you. Some of you remember the moment when your spouse came to you and said, I cannot do this anymore. And I don't love you anymore. I wonder if I ever did love you. And I'm leaving. Some of you can close your eyes and you can still put yourself in them. You still see that moment. And it was so dark. Here's the amazing thing about this Jesus. He can take that moment of your biggest pain. And he can redeem it. And he can turn your life around. And he can help you see that you're loved and valued even without this person. And then the situation comes up where somebody else gets a divorce, and then you're sitting across from them and you're putting your hand on them and saying, you know what? You can do this. And you're going to find that God is in there. And God uses that horrible hurt and pain to do something good. I have been in this church sitting with people who said, you know what? Alcohol was my thing. And now God is using that alcoholic person who's given that up, and they got the chips to prove it. And they're using that person to help the next person. And this horrible, difficult thing brought this great beam of light, and their biggest purpose in that moment. Or maybe you're a high school student and you struggle and you've been made fun of and mocked. When you let God come into that light, then you become the person that cares for the other person that's being mocked. And your purpose comes out. Because that's the whole purpose of this story, is God shines his light into your darkest moment. It's what happened in the beginning when Jesus came, and it can happen in your heart. So why don't we close like this? Why don't you bow your head? I want to start like this. Remember, for those people that found Jesus, remember the moment when God came in the first time and he shined light into your darkness. Remember and say thank you. Now I want to say this to you. Who is that? Is there a person here, or is there that thing that is causing darkness in your soul right now? A hurt, a pain, a difficulty. We're just going to all join together and pray and just say, God, shine your light into this darkness. Show me how you can bring good into this darkness. Just take a moment and pray that. Lord God, I pray for all of my friends in those dark moments that they just shared. Some of them seems like, oh, there's no way, God. There's no way you can shine into that. But God, I pray that you would. And that they would see you, that you are walking along with them. And you may not take them out of it, but you will assuredly walk through them with that and grow them in ways that they never would have grown before. Okay, well, every head is bowed. I got to say this, and you know what's coming. If you do not have that relationship with Jesus, but you realize today that he wants to shine light into your darkness and begin that relationship with you, and God's been pursuing you, then pray this. Say, dear God, forgive me of my sin. God, I have brought so much darkness into my own life. I have messed up so many different ways. God, you come into my life. I give my life to you today. And I put you in charge. If you pray that, that begins a brand new life for you. And I would love to say that all your difficulty are going to go away or it's going to become easy. It won't. Your life's not like that. But he will walk with you. And even in your darkest moments, he will shine light. If you pray that, again, it's a brand new life for you. We just would love to know about it. There's a card right in front of your chair in front of you that, you know, it's a first-time decision card. Take that, fill it out, put it in the box and back. We'd love to help you on that journey. Lord Jesus, I pray. Thank you so much that even when it's dark, that you can shine into our lives. And I pray that my friends would see that today. In your name we pray. Amen.